Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Robert Ross from Rick Bergeron.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're aboard the Tornado, Tony Pentagal.
We got a pretty good show for you, just wrapping up last week's events and news. And I did not get a guest. Spend some more time on getting that done. But we got plenty to talk about. We got a lot of former guests in the news. Thanks for Tom pointing that out for us. Just sent us something today about Big Butcheroo with Tony Lee. We actually put it on the blog yesterday, but I found it at another site. Going overseas, Tony is. He's going to take a jump across the pond instead of across the border to the United States. He was originally going to fight Minnesota on a card that's televised on CBS Sports. He was supposed to fight Ira Terry. Now he's going to fight for a championship belt. So,
I did hear that, and that's pretty cool. Because, we got to interview Tony. He's a good guy, and he's a pretty good damn fighter, too.
Yes, he is. He looked really good his last time out on ESPN Saturday Night Fight, so obviously a big opportunity for him. He's fighting Gary Matthews, who's 37-9-2 with 20 knockouts. And Tony is 19-2. He's got a lot of experience, a lack of experience compared to Matthews, I guess, but he's got a lot of experience to overcome, I guess, on Matthews' side. But it's for the WBA interim lightweight title. So it's a lot to fight for, and it is going to be over in enemy territory for Luis Matthews from the UK, and he's going to be fighting in Liverpool, England, at the Echo Arena. And I don't think it's televised here in the United States, but I'm sure if you go on firstrowsports.eu, you'll probably be able to find the feed. And here's our psychic Tom. How's it going,
all
Tom?
All right. Gentlemen, here we go. Another week.
Yep.
I got a little bit more of a voice than I do last week. I'm still coughing, but at least I have somewhat lung power.
Well, you sound a little better.
Yeah. I want to go back to the gym. I'm going to try to go tomorrow. Mm. I haven't been able to work out. I feel ornery.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a pretty good workout myself yesterday. I got all the way down to 205. And then in 2 days, I was back up to 220 because I didn't work out. I got that.
You know, when I had gotten, and I didn't realize how heavy I got when I got out of shape, because you figure, when I was in college, my walk around weight, which for people that don't understand, boxing and amateur or collegiate style wrestling, a walk around weight is what they figure out when you're not training. So, you see that, Arturo Gatti, for example, in celebration of Thunder's 43rd birthday yesterday, may he rest in peace. A guy like Gatti, he was going to go up to the career at 170. So, for me, when I was at the big summers when I was in college, my walk around was only around 200. I had gotten up to close to 260 when I weighed in before I started the diet, and now I'm at about 212.
That's good.
Yeah, not too bad. But, well, I think I had a few weeks ago, I bought some new pants because the other ones were falling off me. These ones are starting to fall off me.
You're definitely accelerating yourself pretty quick there, then.
So,
yes, I got to be doing what I'm doing. Well, some our weight loss techniques. We've got a lot to cover. We got Bellator MMA making some waves there recently. Just today, I guess, or yesterday, they took Phil Davis out of the UFC. He ran out of his time with the UFC, so contract ended, and Bellator snatched him up. He says in a press release, "I can't wait to be fighting in Bellator and wreck shop on everyone." I am the absolute best and most dominant grappler to ever fight in MMA, and I'm excited to get in there and compete at my new home. I don't know if I agree with him on the best and most dominant grappler shit, but...
Yeah.
Biggest fish in the small pond there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, his wrestling skills are great, but to be a complete grappler, you need submission skills as well, and he hasn't, you know, he's not that big of a submission threat, so... But to my knowledge, this is really kind of a monumental step here. When I don't think the UFC released him, it seems the impression I get is Phil made this decision on his own. It wasn't like it was you're out of here, right? It
rumored a couple of days ago, and then that actually happened. But he had lost a couple fights, I think, in the last few fights, but nothing. Nothing that other people didn't stay because of. So, you know, I figured
right.
He'd had power and name recognition enough to stay in the UFC for a while, but...
Right, well, normally in those situations, they say he was... that the UFC released him from his contract. It's not like his contract ran out. I mean, because the way I'm reading it is his contract ran out, and... I don't know if he negotiated with the UFC, but obviously he decided he'd go with Bellator. It doesn't seem like it was the UFC's decision to say, we're not re-signing you. I didn't see anything like that unless I missed something. That's very interesting.
No, it sounds like that's probably, I don't know, something that should be looked into, at least find out see if he actually did get any kind of office. Or if Bellator's offer was bigger and better, we don't know yet. During his time in the UFC, he had wins over Glover Teixeira, Lyoto Machida, Antonio Rogério Nogueira, Alexander Gustafsson, and Brian Stann. And he's currently number 6 in Sherdog.com's 205-pound rankings. So the other thing is, too, that he's not going to have to fight John Jones to get the title. So I'm sure he likes that. So, I don't know, who's the title holder in Bellator now, Liam McGeary? I think that would be a pretty good matchup. Phil is definitely more physically fit than McGeary, that's for sure. He's definitely more cut and muscular, but McGeary has a lot of skills. So, he's got to fight me all over the place, but it'd be worth watching. And, you know, I think he's got a better shot of beating McGeary than he does Jones.
Yeah, I think he would have had more trouble getting Jones down, but I think it may have been intriguing had he been able to get Jones down and then just see if he could, you know, that favorite phrase, wrestle fuck him. See if he could keep Jones down. I mean, getting Jones down is one thing, keeping him down is something else. So would have been fun to watch, but well, who knows? Who knows? Maybe we'll see it someday, somehow.
Yeah. Interesting story here about Marvin Hagler. Somebody got a hold of him while he was out in Shanghai somewhere. I don't know if he's living there now or what, but last I heard he was living in Italy. He's definitely an overseas type of guy. He doesn't really spend a lot of time in the United States. I don't know why that is. Maybe he just likes it that much more over there or something. But anyway, he's in the news because he's talking about Floyd Mayweather. Just a few weeks before Mayweather versus Pacquiao. He gave his opinion on the money man, said that basically it's not class and really no way for a champion to act about the way Floyd's behaving lately. He says, if you have the skills, you don't need to impress everybody by being a show-off. Then when you get beat, the public stays behind the winner instead of with you when you are the champion. Mayweather has been lucky and fortunate enough that his father and uncle taught him everything about boxing, so he relies on me still. He's content how he has made himself real known inside the boxing world. You really haven't seen too much of the charitable side of him. And this was comments Hagler made on the 30th anniversary of his big fight with Thomas Hearn. It was the war.
You know, I kind of wish they would stop making comparisons to that fight with the impending Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. It's not fair to anyone now. I mean, that fight was Well, we're still talking about it. And it had to be one of some of the most exciting thrills. And I'm sure you guys have seen the films, but you can imagine seeing it as it was unfolding. I mean, the drama was incredible. And I don't think there was really too much bad blood between them. That's what made it even more intriguing. It was just a honest-to-God fight. And with this one, I mean, I know we'll be talking about this more, and I know Tony's predictions will be coming up next week, huh, Tony? But...
I'll say in the next week.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, we're waiting with bated breath, but you know, it's funny because
usually I have it out within 3 to 4 days of the flight. And I'm going to try to get it at least about a week out for this one. Figure maybe by next Saturday, next Sunday.
Okay. You know, Floyd. I was reading in one of his interviews where he just said he's not going to change his style. He said, why should he? To please the fans. So this one has potential to be a snooze fest. I hope I'm wrong, though. Oh, I hope I'm wrong.
Oh, yeah. I know. You know what? You know what's scary about that? Is the fact that, like, there was so much hype behind his fight. We've talked about it for about 7 years now. About 6 years at least, 2009. So much hype behind it. If it goes up to this point, that hurts the sport. And, you know, as long as the mentality,
right.
Floyd's only taking the point. Now... Maybe that's me being selfish saying, oh, this fight, you're the style because I want to see a good fight. You know, I want the fight to really be exciting. And that's kind of selfish on my part and selfish on a lot of boxing fans' part. But a good fight, and you think, I mean, obviously, Hagler Hearns is exceptional. Scotty Ward, exceptional. Steve Corral is exceptional. You know, I'll settle for something, you know, even less than Leonard Hearns, which is a very good fight. You know, I think the dramatic ending made it to the point of great, but I would settle for that. Hell, I would settle for, you know, Pacquiao Bradley, too, which was a pretty good damn fight. I would settle for... Well, McDonough won, or Mayweather Castillo won, or even Mayweather Cotto, which were all pretty good fights. If Mayweather fights something like he did Miguel Cotto, or he did Marcus McDonough, I think you're going to get a pretty good damn fight.
Well, we'll see, for sure. But Hagler had a little bit more to say about the whole thing. He actually did compare the Mayweather versus Pacquiao fight to one of his own fights, but not the Tommy Hearns fight, the Leonard fight. So he says, look how long it took Leonard to get his heart together to fight me. It takes a lot of time for people to finally decide when they're going to do this. But on Leonard's part, looked at me, he was just waiting for me to get old. And when I got on and soft, then he says, okay, I want to fight. Floyd was using psychology, and he is still using it. In the beginning, he was setting his own type of rules of saying, you've got to take a blood test before you fight me. Floyd was thinking maybe he was on steroids because he was knocking everybody out, so he was a little afraid. Finally now, both of them have to prove themselves. Good stuff there. Glad to
see that. Hagler will never really let that Leonard thing go. I guess that's been eating at him all these years.
Yeah.
Huh.
With a guy like Marvin is a very proud fighter, very, very proud man. And, you know, what I did in the sport is, you know, not even close to what he did. Not even close. I know, and Rich has heard me talk about it, I'm still bitter about that one fight I had with the former rival in the birth of ours by the name of Jeff Kahn from Penn State. Because I had beaten him at the Naval Academy. And then I'm fighting at Penn State, and he was holding me to grasp. You know, he had a good first round, and then I started taking over. But that's the thing. You know, he was in his home arena. He was the darling favorite, like Leonard was the darling favorite. You know, he was each of those, because Leonard was the underdog. And he won. Oh, people were cheering, and you know, I'm still bitter about it. So, now... you know, magnify that 1,000 times or more, you know, for who Hagler, you know, or was, and how he still is, and the magnitude of that fight.
Yeah, it would be bitter. I mean, obviously, so many people thought he won that fight, so that pissed them off. And the fact that Sugar Ray waited until that time where he could be competitive against him. Obviously, that bothers him a lot.
Now, I will tell you, going back to the Leonard Hagler fight, one tactical mistake that Hagler made, if you go back and watch it, Hagler was a naturally right-handed fighter. But he fought fastball, and he was very effective fighting fastball. And from time to time, he would switch up and fight orthodox. But he was, I'll say, 80% of the time or 85% of the time, he fought fastball. He came out in that fight fighting conventional. And he gave away the first four rounds. Now, you got a 12-round fight going, and you already got him a whole 4-0.
Yeah.
He needs to come around. Now, unless there's a knockdown or a point deduction for the foul, now the best you can get is a draw. You're already digging yourself into a pretty big hole there. And also, why I just thought of it, I always thought it was one of the most ridiculous things in the beat. If you get back to Rocky II, I was watching Rocky One last night. You go back to Rocky II, and, you know, Mickey's like, all right, Rocky, you're a southpaw, but you got a bad eye. So he wants you to fight right-handed, and that'll confuse Apollo. No, it won't. Apollo fought almost all predominantly right-handed fighters his entire career because they even said it in the softball. Oh, he's a southpaw. Yeah, well, but you're messing with those southpaws. No, and now they're going to turn you around and have you fight right-handed. You see, just get your best advantages away. You see, you're fighting out of your comfort zone, and he's fighting the style that he's used to seeing. Yeah, that is great for the movie. In real life practice, anyhow.
Exactly. And then, remember this too. You never wanted to get into a hole with Leonard because he was damn good at stealing rounds. You know, he was one of the best guys around since Ali. He would flurry in the last 20 seconds. And I know that there were some people that critiqued that and said, well, what's the deal? But, hey, you do what you can get away with. And that's why some of those rounds were so darn close. And then I remember Gil Clancy talking about the Petrocelli brothers. I believe it was after the 10th round or after the 11th. But they're in there talking like they're just very relaxed. And really, Marvin desperately needed that those last two rounds. And, you know, like Clancy said, that they should have been screaming at him, trying to light a fire under him. I mean, I know it wasn't really their style, but maybe sometimes, you know your fighter, and he needed that. And obviously what they did didn't work. But I remember Gil commenting on it during the pay-per-view, right during the live broadcast. So, you know, that's the way it went.
Well, just after that, I got some hockey news. The spinoff Creed started to film. Michael B. Jordan is playing the nephew of Creed, Apollo Creed, 28 years old. He actually kind of looks like Carl Weathers, a mini Carl Weathers. Kind of funny.
What, from the movie that they're making?
In this Creed movie, they had a snapshot of Michael B.
Yeah,
the actor with Rocky. With Sylvester.
Do you know the name of the actor playing him?
Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious.
It is hilarious.
Now, I'm not sure in that movie if it's going to be his son or his grandson. The original storyline is going to be Apollo's grandson and his whole career, you know, he's...
Grandson.
Yeah, it's just like his whole life, you know, he's been wealthy, you know, obviously from all of his grandfather's earnings, and now he's finding the calling to get into boxing. But then someone's like, no, they're going to make him be his long-lost son, who was born after Apollo died. So it's like, okay, so the most this kid's going to be is 30 years old if Apollo died in 85 during the height of the Cold War. So you're already talking about a 30-year-old novice boxer. That's kind of idiotic to start. Well, he was born after Apollo died. He still had to be conceived while Apollo was alive. So, okay, well, I'm sorry. He's 29 years old in 3 months. He's going to start his career. And then I said, unless there's some frozen Creed sperm, you know, floating around. Someone's like, well, it was from an affair outside of marriage. Oh, so now Apollo's an adulterer. Some of, you know, get over the fact that... is still going to be 29 years old, which is Apollo's son, because Apollo died. The end. You know? Well, that was being my usual sarcasm. I can't help it. But if they make it his grandson, I think it's a fair pay. If they make it his son, it's going to be very idiotic.
If his grandson, the kid's going to be like, right? Normal situation. Unless the, you know, the kid got the girl pregnant when he was 12 or something. I don't know. It's tough to believe if you've, you know, if you got this whole thing on a timeline. But I don't think Rocky fans are that particular about there.
The Rocky timeline is always great. You know, he goes to Russia, his kid's 9. He comes back from Russia like 3 months later, the kid's like 12 or 13. That was always great. And then it's like, I was actually thinking about this today. I was thinking about Rocky 4. It's like, okay, Drago, we're going to come fight you out of there. And Apollo's in the same hall, just fucking up on him. All right. And he's like, all right, we're going to fight. Okay. And then Apollo, they never show when the fight was, and you never see on Apollo's date, so when he died. Who did you say it was in the summer? He was in the pool. Who did you say it was in the summer? Apollo died by mid-August. They get all this red tape to have a fight in Moscow by Christmas. And then,
like I said,
Rocky comes back, and the kid's like 8 years.
That's crazy.
You know, the only other movies that I thought was worse continuity than that were the Friday the 13th movies. Part 2, Jason was like that 5'8", all red hair, scaggy beard. Part 2, which is the very next day, he's about 6'4", he's bald. Oh my God, shit, Jason cut his hair off, he shaved his head, and grew 4 inches, and he took his steroids. And if you go back, parts 2, 3, and 4 were all like symmetrical. It was like 2, and then it was 3, and then it was 4. They all happened over like a 5-6 day period. Because it was a full moon in every one of them, the longest full moon ever. These are some things that, you know, I just forget.
Right. Well, look at the guy from Philly to know all the inconsistencies in the Rocky movies.
I'm still a little bit bitter about the last one that they cut me out of.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's
a... I said in my headshots, you know, when they're looking at the background boxes. This is before I really started getting in shape. I mean, this is like, who's Diane here? Yeah, I know Diane. Is this a pirate photo? I think I have a photo of my dude Albert. Someone got asked a few years ago. I'm like, I'm not competing anymore, but I'm still actively training, and I'm still working out, and I'm still training others. And then, of course, I took some photos of me in the Apollo outfit. Maybe that would sweat him. No, it didn't. But, you know, I didn't want to do a background scene like I did before. If I was doing something, I wouldn't be in the gym.
Right. Well.
Or like the last one, it's going to be a white trash fighting a violent side of the fight.
We had a big matchup in Bellator over the weekend. Bellator 136 last Friday. A lot of good fights on that card. Rafael Carvalho actually got a pretty big win over Joe Schilling. We talked about last week wanting to be a three-sport athlete with kickboxing, boxing, and MMA. Schilling got the shit end of the bargain here. I thought he won the fight. He was looking good. He had a lot of challenges facing Carvalho, but the announcers even said it was tied going into the second round, and I thought Schilling easily won that second round, or third round. So.
Yeah, that was a very, very depressing outing because, you know, if someone talks before how they're going to really make it a stand-up, knockdown, drag-out, toe-to-toe, bang, 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 and then it winds up with so much wall install. What a letdown. And I thought the referee could have done a better job where, you know, he finally, with all the boos in the crowd and there's 10 seconds left in the round, and he'd say, come on, guys, I'm going to separate you. Well, duh, where were you a minute ago? Just way too much wall install. I mean, I know that you got to work in the clinch, but I didn't think Carvalho was working that much that I felt the referee could have broke them up. I mean, if you're trying to get your opponent down and doing something instead of just hugging him and keeping him against the fence, I mean, that's worse than laying prey, I thought. I don't know, maybe I was just overreacting to it. I was just so excited about a good fight, and we just didn't see it. And I wouldn't have been that upset if Carmelo wouldn't have said, he'd made all these promises. Yeah, I'm gonna stand with him. Why not? Well, okay, why didn't you?
I'm thinking it might have something to do with the fact that Carvalho is now suspended for 6 months due to a broken jaw.
No.
And he decided, okay, I'm going to quit all that toe-to-toe shit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably one of the reasons why it could have happened like that. Shane is a great striker, too, you know. It's just...
I wouldn't have knocked his stretch, and it could, you're right, it could have been on the fly, but, you know, it's just tone it down, okay? I mean, if you feel your best way is to not trade with him, I mean, I think that would be the best way to fight Schilling, is to not take it to his strength, because what's that old Teddy Atlas cliche? Maybe you're better at the guy than your opponent's strongest point, but why give him his best chance to win? But
yeah.
That wasn't what we heard before things got started. So, anyways, moving right along.
Yeah, that wasn't the only injury either on this guy. There's a lot of broken bones. Alexander Sarnowski broke his right knee. Alexander Volkov broke his right hand. Saeed Awad broke his right foot. Fabricio Guerrero broke his left hand. And Jay Bogan broke his left knee.
Whoa.
So, ouch. A lot of setbacks on the bench for a while here. And it kind of like is a commentary on, how dangerous MMA can really be. I mean, how often do you hear about a broken knee in boxing?
Yeah, that hurts to just hear it described like that.
But broken knee, yeah.
Broken knee, I mean, what do they do in that case? I mean, a broken bone, they just kind of put a cast on, but a broken knee?
Yeah.
I never quite heard of it like that.
Oh, a fracture, but I mean, I never even heard of that happening in an MMA fight.
No.
Apparently that's what happened here. Two guys broke their knees.
Yeah, I hope they're okay.
One broke the right, and the other broke the left. So maybe they can put their arms with each other and walk around.
I guess you got to keep a sense of humor about it. You know, I hope they're not listening. They might not think it's so funny. I've got this image now in my mind, Rich. Thanks, buddy.
You look at the Olympics, you used to laugh when you're dealing with that kind of pain. So I bet you they sit backstage and thought of the same thing. Anyway, just in those fights that we had, Marcin held, lived up to his last name there, and he held up to a knee bar on Alexander Nansky. A big win there. Another example of verbal submission.
I would say Marcin may be the best submission artist in MMA now. I think he's even surpassed Namie and Maya, because we haven't seen Maya work that magic in a while now. And with Held, you know that that's what he's going for, and that's the exciting thing about it. When you know what the guy's going to do, and you can't stop him from doing it. So he's, I'm so impressed with him.
Definitely good. Will Brooks had a difficult first round against an aggressive Dave Jansen, but he pretty much turned the tide and made Jansen look like he'd just been on a hatchet attack. Unanimous win there for Bill, all five rounds, and pretty interesting fight. Then we had Tony Johnson beat Alexander Volkov by split decision, and Joey Beltran beat Brian Rogers by unanimous decision. And the second fight of the night, Saeed Awad beat Sinclair by unanimous decision. Not going to go through all the rest of them. But there's actually a toehold submission, believe it or not, in this card. Steve Ramirez won by toehold submission. I always thought that was a joke.
No, that does not tickle, believe me.
Okay.
But it does sound like a pro wrestling, like a Boston Crab or something. We haven't seen a submission by Boston Crab, have we?
No.
or I remember when I was a kid, we had the Sheik, and he did the camel clutch, where he would take the back, but instead of going for a rear naked choke, he'd just grab the guy's forehead and start pulling up on it until the guy was screaming, and the referee'd stop and tell the Sheik to stop. The Sheik wouldn't stop, but yeah, the camel clutch. I haven't seen submission by that either.
Tom, it's funny actually, because I have a photo from a few weeks ago at a WrestleMania party, and there's a picture of me in the camel clutch.
No, but there actually was a Boston Crab attempt at one point in an MMA fight. I do remember vaguely seeing it, and had to have been Joe Rogan, so it was a UFC fight. Joe Rogan was saying, oh, man, I've never seen that in my life. Just tried to Boston Crab him. But I totally...
Now, you know, Rich, you're a Boston guy. What is the origin of that name? It has to have some Boston connection. Do you know what is there an origin to it?
I don't know. I mean, I never bothered to research.
You're the Boston guy. That's why I'm asking you. I know what you'll tell me. Google it. So that'll be my assignment if I could present the results of my study next week.
If I had to guess, it's probably just because Boston is, you know, a big seaport, and you know, it's probably a name that's been around forever since maybe, you know, the colonists when they were wrestling or something. And you know,
that's such a great hole.
It had to be something like this. Okay, I'm gonna put this guy in like this move here. It looks like I got him in like, it looks like a crab type move. It looks like a crab. Okay, we'll call it a crab. We got to call it something else now. We'll call it the Boston Crab. The Florida Crab picks up Boston Crab. And here's me and my wrestling nerdism here. Also, I mean, similar to the Boston Crab, where they just kind of turn the one leg to a bench, and it's the Texas Cloverleaf. So you got the crowd from Boston, but the Cloverleaf from Texas, which is almost the same exact thing.
Yeah, the other explanation is maybe it was a guy named Jim Boston who created it. Who knows? Could be that, too. Well, anyway, we got plenty of other stuff to talk about. We got UFC fights over the weekend we didn't even make any mention of. Me and Tom were correct. Mirko Krokop Filipovic got the big win over Gabriel Gonzaga. Took him 3 rounds, mixed in a bunch of elbows and punches to finish him off. I didn't actually watch a single fight on this card. I got thrown off by the time difference, I guess, again, because it was in Poland. And it wasn't on free TV, so they didn't rebroadcast it in prime time. So I got to just read about it. And sounds like exactly what we predicted just came true, Tom.
Yep.
Wasn't Chris? He had a couple of losses in his last few fights, so he probably wasn't coming in with all that much confidence. And Filipovic just manhandled him. Another interesting fight, Jimmy Manua beat Jan Blachowicz in the co-main event there by unanimous decision. But the fact that Manua won this fight is pretty amazing, considering the fact that he came into the fight with a serious injury. He says, I almost didn't make it to the fight. I only got cleared, like, literally last week to fight. I had a bad knee injury. I tore my meniscus and MCL and ACL as well. They told me I shouldn't fight, and I said, no, I've got to fight. I can't pull out of the fight. So, you know, it was a big decision for me and the team, but we had to go through with it. So, talk about broken knees. That is intense there for a guy to go in there with that. Damage and winning unanimous decision. Also on the card, Pavlak beat Sheldon Westcott by unanimous decision. Marina Moroz beat Joanne Calderwood by armbar submission a minute and 30 seconds into the fight. Leon Edwards beat Seth Pazinski by knockout 8 seconds into the fight. That's probably close to a record. Bartel Stebinski beat Garrett McClellan by unanimous decision. Sergio Moraes beat Michael LeBeau by unanimous decision. A lot of decisions on this card. Anthony Hamilton beat Daniel Imolansik by decision. Unanimous again. Alexandra Albu beat Isabella Abrek by guillotine choke finish in the second round. Stephen Ray beat Bandel by TKO in the second round. And Taylor Lapolis beat Rocky Lee by unanimous decision. So, that leaves just the UFC on Fox 15 upcoming card. There's really nothing else for MMA going on from the big circuits this weekend, except for UFC. And this one's in Newark, New Jersey, so it ought to be on my time zone. Last time I checked, it is. Anyway, Luke Rockhold versus Lyoto Machida is the main event. Rockhold comes in 13-2, and Machida comes in at 22-5.
Yeah. You know, that's, this is an intriguing one because when Machida came around, there was a mystique about him. He was a puzzle. I remember when he beat Rich Franklin years ago, that really got my attention. And it seems like now the puzzle's been figured out. So I'm leaning toward Rockhold in that one. How do you feel about it?
I kind of like Machida because of the way he really dismantled last guy fought. It wasn't a big name, but he just keeps looking better and better. And you know,
CB Dolloway, the last guy he fought. Yeah.
And well, one kick, and that's all it takes sometimes. But Rockhold really hasn't been tested in the UFC yet either. He's had a few good fights, but this is the biggest name he's fought. So it's going to be a tough one to really decide who's going to get the win. It could actually be a draw for the distance.
Yeah, it's definitely good matchmaking because we'll see how Machida's evolved. I know he's working on his strength and conditioning quite a bit, from what I've heard. But we'll see how the strategy comes out. I'm sure AKA will have a good strategy for Rockhold. So got to go on record. It's a slight favorite. But, hey, what do I say? I've been wrong before, and this one could be close.
I'm just going to be devil's advocate and say Machida, but this thing is the biggest name that Rockhold has beaten so far, and he had a loss to Vitor Belfort back on May 18th of 2013. Since he's been in the UFC, he's had three fights. Costas Philippou, Tim Boach, and Michael Bisping all wins. First round, the Bisping win came in the second round with a guillotine. So the last time he had a five-round fight was against Tim Kennedy in Strikeforce, and that went to decision. So I think that's what's going to happen here. It's going to be a very controversial split decision, and I think Machida's going to get it. But, like you said, anyway, the arm collector, Ronaldo Souza, is also on this card. He's at 21-3. And Chris Camozzi, who's 20-9, and of course he's got that nickname, Souza does, because he likes to go for arm bars. So I hope Camozzi has, boned up on that in this training. So otherwise, it's going to be the end to this fight. And we got Cub Swan back in action. He's 21-6, fighting Max Holloway, who's 12-3. And Paige Van Zandt, she's only 4-1, but she's making a lot of buzz with UFC fans. She's getting a lot of people interested. And I don't even really think she's like that hot. You know, everybody's like, oh, the hottest girl in MMA. And I don't see it. She's fighting Felice Herrig, who's 10-5. But, she's just generating way more publicity than Herrig is. And she wasn't even on the Ultimate Fighter page. So I don't know where it's coming from, but I guess maybe it's personality and looks combined. But it's kind of funny. We'll see if she lives up to her hype. Herrig is a tough competitor, so I'm going to be waiting to see what happens there. And then we got a very intense fight here. Jip Miller versus Benil Dariush. Miller is 24-5. Dariush is 10-1. And Miller was at the top of the heap for a while. looked like nobody could stop him. And just had a couple really difficult, ugly fights, and just never really been the same since. Actually, kind of reminds me of when we were talking to John Scully, and he mentioned that about Jeff Lacy, just never being the same after after he had the shoulder surgery. And he had a tough fight. He never ever recovered from, but he had some battles with Benson Henderson and Nate Diaz right after putting together a big win streak, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 fight win streak, ending with a win over our former guest, Kamal Shalarous, who kind of crapped out of the UFC pretty quickly, unfortunately. But yeah, he had a bad fight against Henderson, lost by unanimous decision, and Nate Diaz, he got submitted by guillotine choke back in 2012. And then he went on to score his next four fights without Luke until he fought Donald Cerrone. That was his last fight back in July of 2014, and he got knocked out in the second round with a head kick and punches, so... Beneil Dariush isn't a huge name, but, you know, he's only got one loss. And, you know, it's, I think it's kind of a little bit like, you know, throwing him somebody that he can beat rather than throwing him to the wolves like they have been doing. So we'll see. Hopefully, you know, for Jim's sake, his experience helps him out there. We've also got Irvin St. Preux, 17-6, fighting Patrick Cummins, who's 7-1. Corey Anderson, another Ultimate Fighter guy. He's 5-0. Fights Gian Alante, who's 12-5. Takeya Mizugaki from the card. He's 28-2. Fighting Sterling, who's 10-0. We got Tim Means, 23-6-1, fighting George Sullivan, who's 16-3. And way down the card this time, after headlining against the Irish guy there, we got Diego Brandao. Fighting Jim Heddies. Brandao's 18-10. Heddies is 11-2. Who's the guy? Conor McGregor, yeah. Fought Conor McGregor. Brandao.
So Jacare was supposed to fight Yoel Romero. I guess then, if I understand, Romero got hurt in training. So congratulations to Chris for stepping up, but it's going to be a tough assignment for him, for sure.
Right. And the first fight of the night is Eddie Gordon, the winner of the Ultimate, I think. 7-2. Fighting Chris Dempsey is 10-2. So.
Chris Dempsey, boy, that's a good name for a fighter, huh? Isn't that a great name for a fighter?
I actually met Dempsey, who was in the MMA, down in Iowa. And it turns out he was related to Jack. He was like a great grandfather or something, or great uncle, something like that. But yeah, that was back at Coliseum Carnage in Iowa, way back in the day. All right. So I'm just gonna take a quick look at Beneil Dariush's record. His one loss is to Ramzi Majen back in April of 2014. Since then, he's strung together three wins against Tony Martin, Carlos Diego Ferreira, and Darren Cruikshank. And all of them are finishes. So Jim Miller is going to have to be on the top of his game for this one.
Yeah, that guy's no cheap date.
Actually, every single one of Dariush's wins, except for his debut, were submissions or stoppages. So that's pretty decent there. He's got like a, it says that, let's see, 80%? No, so he's got two decisions. Oh, yeah. He's got a decision for Ferreira. So he's got 80% knockout rate. It's pretty good. Okay, so now we got to go to boxing. We got a big boxing schedule coming up this weekend. Of course, the big, big, big fight is Provodnikov versus Nafish.
Cool.
We have shitload of fights on Friday night. There's just turn to any sports channel Friday night, and you're going to find something. We're going to get Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun having fights on the same night on different networks here. in Connecticut. So pretty big stuff. But at Fox Ridge, we'll start off with that. That's going to be on USA, on Fox Sports 1, I should say. Main event there is Murat Gassiev, who's undefeated at 20-0 with 14 knockouts. He's fighting Felix Cora Jr., 25-6-2 with 14 knockouts. That fight is for the IBF Intercontinental Cruiserweight title. Every time I hear Intercontinental, I think of WWE.
You know, it's funny because we talked about WWE today.
George the Animal Steel. He's the one that used to eat the turnbuckle, right?
Yeah, he's 78 years old today.
Wow.
Okay. Somebody posted it online, and the picture was asking, like, oh, wish him this Hall of Famer happy birthday. So, of course, I took the photo and posted that as my throwback Thursday Thursday tonight.
Another guy with a famous name, Ray Robinson, is also on this card. 19-2 with 9 knockouts. He's fighting for the WBO NABO welterweight title against Shirzadbek Alimjanov, who is 22-2 with 13 knockouts.
Boy, a name like Ray Robinson, huh? Wow.
That's the new Ray Robinson.
You know, it's funny. That's his real name.
Yeah. And there is it.
He fought one time at the Valley Forge Casino, but I don't think it was the time you went. I think it was the time before that.
We also have an 8-round welterweight fight between Dusty Hernandez Harrison, who's undefeated at 25-0, 13 knockout win. He's fighting Henry Alrod, who's 16-9 with 1 draw, 13 knockout win. And then we go all the way to across town to the Mohegan Sun for ESPN2's Friday Night Fights. And the main event there is Super Welterweights. Tony Harrison, also undefeated, also 20-0, like the other main event fighter. He's got 17 of those 20 wins by knockout. And he's fighting Pablo Munguia, who's 20-6 with 11 knockouts. And another undefeated fighter at super featherweight in the co-main event, Ryan Kielczewski from the Massachusetts area. I've seen him fight a bunch of times. He is 22-0 with 6 knockouts, fighting Danny Espino, 16-2 with 10 knockouts. And we've got three big 8-rounders, I guess you could say. Well, 4 if you want to count the 6-rounder. That would be 3. There's a 6-rounder, 3 big 8-rounders, I should say. So, Kevin Farmer, super featherweight, 8-rounder. He's 18-4 with 4 knockouts. He's fighting Angel Luna, who's 10-0 with 6 knockouts. Does have 1 draw. And we've got super welterweight, 8-rounder, Atlantez Fox, who is 14-0-1 with 4 knockouts, fighting Franklin Gonzalez, who's 16-13 with 10 knockouts. And the third and final 8-round fight is a light heavyweight fight between Lennox Allen, 18-0-1 with 11 knockouts, fighting Paul Gonsalves, who's 7-6-1 with 8 knockouts. And 6-round lightweight fight between Amos Howard, who is 10-0-1 with 8 knockouts, fighting Anthony Bergen, who's 8-0 with 1 knockout. Somebody said those got to go there. And that's pretty much it. That's the big fight there. And then also on Friday night, the USA. Our CBS Sports Network, will have fights from Hinkley, Minnesota, where Tony Luis was supposed to fight, but now he's fighting for a title over in England. They don't even have his original opponent on here, Ira Terry, so I guess he was thrown off the card altogether. But the main event here is Dennis Hogan versus Tyrone Brunson. Hogan is 20-0-1 with 7 knockouts. Brunson is 22-4 with 1 draw, 21 knockouts. This is for the vacant WBA, NABA, USA Super Welterweight title. Well, 8-rounder on this card, Rob Brandt. He's undefeated at 14-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting Dionisio Miranda, who's 22-10-2 with 19 knockouts. And we've got heavyweights, 6 rounds. Gerald Miller, 11-0-1 with 9 knockouts, fighting Raymond Oatsgang, who is 26-18-3, 21 knockouts. And I think we've had this guy on the show, another heavyweight on the card, Joey Abel, 29-28. Right. And he's fighting a guy we'd love to have on the show, and we just haven't tracked down yet, Travis Fulton, who has one of the most unbelievable records in MMA. Pretty crazy boxing record, too. Just like Abel, he has one less knockout than he has wins. He's 22-38-1 with 21 knockout wins. So that should be a little barn burner there between those two. That's about it for big stuff on Friday.
Now, Rich, is the Matisse fight televised?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it is. It's on HBO or Showtime, one of the two. I think HBO.
But again, maybe I'm getting spoiled here with what we've had the past couple of weeks. What a great fight for network television that would be.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, think about it. But now some geniuses have to figure, well, we'll put it on the premium channels so not that many people can see it. And it just, I don't know, it just leaves me scratching my head about that. I mean, to me, that is, if you're a fan of boxing, how could you not want to see that fight?
Right. Mm. By the way, I mentioned Paul Salvers fighting at one of the Mohegan, either Mohegan Sun or Foxwoods just now. Might recognize that name because that was the opponent Will Rosinski was going to face at Madison Square Garden for the big FDNY event there against the Garda, Irish Police Force. And Rosinski was part of the pro card. He knocked out Gonzalez in round one. So, good stuff there. And here he is, Gonzalez. Quick turnaround. Just about a month later, he's going up against this guy, Lennox Allen, who's undefeated. So, gotta give him credit. He's a tough guy. He's willing to take all comers there. He's on a four-fight winless streak. He had one draw against a guy named Sergio Cabrera, who was 0-3 in his home stadium there in Memorial Hall. He's trying. Got to give him credit there. All right, so Saturday. No, still Friday. Saturday. Thought I had this all queued up, but I guess I don't. Okay, here it is. So, first of all, we'll go over a couple fights on the UK card. Gary Matthews fighting Tony Lewis. We mentioned that right off the bat at the beginning of the show for the interim WBA World Lightweight title. From Liverpool, and Gary Matthews is 37-9-2 with 20 knockouts. Tony Lewis is 19-2 with 7 knockouts, and it's his 12-round lightweight fight. The other co-main event is Liam Smith, who's 19-0-1 with 9 knockouts, fighting David Ezekiel Romero, who's 11-5 with 5 knockouts. That one is for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Super Welterweight title. Yeah, that's about it for that card. Nothing too crazy. The vacant IBF Intercontinental Female Featherweight title is also on the line this weekend in El Paso, Texas. Doesn't even say the venue. That's weird. How the hell are we supposed to know where it is? Just walk up punching each other? So Jennifer Han is fighting for this. She's 11-3-1 with one knockout, fighting Fatuma Zarika, who's 24-9-2 with 14 knockouts. And our former guest is also on this card, middleweight eight-rounder he's fighting in, Hector Camacho Jr., our, believe it or not, our most listened-to episode. Camacho is 58-6 with 32 knockouts, one draw, and he's fighting Arturo Mijares, who's 4. And let's see. Stuff going on in New York. And there's another junior fighting, too. Not only is Hector Camacho Jr. fighting, but Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is fighting. Andres Fonfara from California this week. And this
Stevens in a really good fight not too long ago. That would be a nice test for Junior. It was funny, they were talking to Junior the other day, and he made a comment, and it was something like, and he was being sincere, but everybody's making fun of him, about his weight. Because, now I think he's weighing something like 172 or something that it was. And he said something like, yeah, right. He's like, oh, no problem making weight. They're like, yeah, 250 is the weight.
Yeah, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., light heavyweight. Wow, I didn't even know he was that high. Light heavyweight fight. He's 48-1-1 with 32 knockouts. Fonfara is 26-3 with 15 knockouts. This fight is for a title, too, the WBC International Light Heavyweight title. Also, the interim WBA World Super Bantamweight title is up for grabs in the co-main event. Between Super Bantamweight's Oscar Eskandon, who's 24-1 with 16 knockouts, and Moises Flores, who's 22-0 with 16 knockouts. And if that's not enough, we've got a couple of 10-rounders, 3 10-rounders. Amir Imam at super lightweight, 16-0 with 14 knockouts, fighting Walter Castillo, 25-2 with 18 knockouts. We've got super welterweight Omar Chavez, 32-3-1 with 22 knockouts, fighting Richard Gutierrez, who's 28-15-1. With 17 knockouts, and Fernando Guerrero, 26-3 with 19 knockouts, fighting Abraham Hahn, who's 23-2 with 14 knockouts. And that was some good matchmaking, I think. That should be a great card for the folks in California, Carson, California, at the StubHub Center, Saturday night. And down at Valley Forge, we got some fights, too. We don't have an opponent for the main event. It looks like 10-rounder welterweight Jamal James, who's 16-0, versus TBA. I think I just put something up. I blog on Fight Unlimited, so they might have had an opponent listed there. Oh. Find that out later, I guess. Anyway, Philip Jackson Benson is in the co-main event at super middleweight. He's 15-1 with 14 knockouts. He's fighting Darnell Boone. 20-21, with 4 draws and 9 knockout wins. And we got a couple 8-rounders worth mentioning here, too. Jarrett Hurd, 14-0, with 8 knockouts, fighting Eric Mitchell, who's 23-11, 2 draws, 11 knockout wins. And it could be, it's not really a mismatch, but David Grayton, 10-0, versus Grayson Blake, 6-3. Blake has 2 knockout wins, Grayton has 8. The welterweight fight. Nothing really jumping out other than that.
Here's what I got to say. Now, I know some of the names on the card. Eric Mitchell, he and I used to train at the same gym. I never really could say that I spoke to him. It was him and his brother. It was Aaron Mitchell and Eric Mitchell. And the first time we interviewed Steve Cunningham back in 2008, Cunningham actually mentioned them by name. Because he said they was part of what's wrong in not just boxing, but in our culture today. Eric Murder Mitchell and Aaron Homicide Mitchell.
Oh, yeah, I remember you talking about them.
Yeah, because that's what Steve said. He's like, what are you trying to portray out there? Murder and Homicide. He's like, my nickname's USF because I was in the Navy. Why do you got to have such negative type of names like that with such a negative connotation to them that promotes violence, that promotes, urban, violence and the killing of their brothers out there. And it was one of them that said, I think it was Eric Mitchell, that I think he was a competitor of the two. And back in the day, he had a fight with Ricardo Mayorga. He lost a 10-round decision. This was when Mayorga was still a, top-ranked welterweight. also, Jason Blake had to serve as a cover in Cipollone played before. He's a player out of Penn State University and a very good boxer. And Darnell Boone also is a fighter that was in the ring and believed held a draw to the great Sergey Kovalev.
All right.
And I'm doing this all without box prep. That's pretty damn good.
Well, we also have fights from Pennsauken, New Jersey, non-televised at the GPG Event Center. Chaz Witherspoon's in the main event against Galen Brown. Really nothing else worth mentioning on this card. Everybody's got less than five fights, it looks like, except for one dude. This fight's pretty interesting. 10 rounds, heavyweight. Witherspoon's 32-3 with 24 knockouts. Galen Brown is 33-29-1 with 25 knockouts. So, big tough guys with big records. See who wins that one. But another fight. HBO looks like they have two fights going on this weekend on Saturday. Terrence Crawford versus Thomas DeLorme, the big one. Crawford's undefeated with 17 knockouts. DeLorme is 22-1 with 14 knockouts. And this is for the vacant WBO World Super Lightweight title. Both guys are pretty good fighters. Crawford.
I think Crawford's going to take him. DeLorme was a good fighter. I thought he played with Hank Lundy. He had Lundy down early. Lundy really dominated him late and should have gotten a decision, if not a draw. And I think just Terrence Crawford is just a leg above right now. Very good fighter, good power. And if Crawford doesn't stop him late, he'll win a pretty clear decision.
And we've got a 10-round lightweight fight between Diego Magdaleno, 27-1 with 11 knockouts, and Luis Solis, who's 15-6-4 with 12 knockouts. We got light heavyweight Medzid Bektemirov, he's 15-0 with 12 knockouts, fighting Michael Gabenga, who's 20-18 with all 20 wins by knockout. Then we got an 8-round welterweight fight between Skender Halili, who's 8-0 with all 8 by knockout, fighting Benjamin Whitaker, who's 8-1 with his 2 knockout wins. Pretty good stuff. And then another 8-rounder between a couple undefeated guys. Ismael Mwendo, 16-0 with 12 knockouts, fighting Rolando Chinea, who's 10-0-1 with 6 knockouts. Pretty good stuff there. And then, of course, we've got another HBO fight card. This one is from Verona, New York. That other one was from Arlington, Texas. And Crawford's from that area, so that's going to be sort of his hometown there. And the one from Verona, New York is Matisse versus Pavlovnikov. Matisse is 36-3 with 34 knockouts. Pavlovnikov is 24-3 with 17 knockouts. So somebody's 3 has got to go. We'll see. Unless it's a draw, and somebody's always got to go because they got no draws. And that's a 12 rounder, of course, even though it's not for a belt. These are two big fighters, really high in the rankings in the super lightweight division, so should be a barn burner. This is it's a big deal. We've also got this two different Russian TV channels, Russia Boxing TV and Russia TV 2. So I guess Putin's going to be pulling for Pavlovnikov. We've also got Eddie Gomez, who's 17-1 with 10 knockouts, fighting Jonathan Batista, who's 14-5 with 7 knockouts. And a 10-round super welterweight fight between Patrick Teixeira, who's 24-0 with 20 knockouts, and Patrick Alati, who's 31 with 24 knockouts. That almost sounds better than the main event. And then it's kind of a mismatch of the week here. 8-rounder middleweight, Vitaly Kopylenko, 24-1 with 14 knockouts, fighting Ethan Byfield, 6-7. I think that is about it. Getting into Sunday here, and early next week. That's about it. for the upcoming stuff. But, of course, we didn't even talk at all about last week's big boxing matches. So we got to get to those. There's nothing really else until next week. So, last week we had another edition of the Premier Boxing Champions. Of course, the big fight there was Peterson versus Garcia. That was the main event. And Lamont Peterson versus Danny Garcia. And that was a hell of a fight.
Yeah.
Peterson, you know, he got a lot of criticism from the opposing trainer and Danny Garcia himself for running. But, you know, that was a strategy that he thought would work for him. And he noticed it wasn't working. He switched it up and became more aggressive. It just was a matter of when he became aggressive. It was a little bit too late, I think, in the fight. And even though he lost, he made Danny Garcia look pretty bad. He left him with a lot of welts and bruises at the end of that fight. And
that was a fight, and let's, you know, let me do a comparison, obviously not on the same scale and not exactly the same. But let's go back to the fight we were talking about at the beginning of our show tonight, Hagler-Leonard. And that's the one where I said how Hagler, you know, gave up the first four rounds, which he started off slow, and now he's already got 4-0 in the 12-round fight. Peterson did even more than that. Peterson, with his movement, you know, I understand the strategy he was trying to avoid. You know, he basically gave up almost the first 7 rounds. Now, he was on the outside, and he was limiting what Garcia could do. Garcia was only giving them like a single punch here, a single punch there. But Garcia was the aggressor. Garcia was making the fight. You know, Peterson was thinking, you know, boxing, and he was moving well, and he was really, you know, pivoting and throwing some nice jabs. They weren't landing. Nothing was landing. And you would get, like, an occasional body shot from Garcia, an occasional left hook to the head from Garcia. And basically, say the third round, for example, you know, Peterson, move, jab, nothing lands. Garcia lands 2 punches, win that round, 10-9. Now you go to a later round when Peterson really sort of amping up the pressure, and he's throwing hard body shots, and he's hitting Garcia, and he's lumping him up a little bit. He wins that round 10-9. So in the round that he let Garcia have 10-9, and the round that he pretty much kicked his ass, same score. And that's the thing, is he gave up too many early rounds. I'll say he gave up the first, you know, 7 rounds, maybe 8. Now, you get into a hole. When he's got a knockdown for a couple of times, you're not going to win.
Right. Makes a lot of sense. Then there was another sort of controversial decision in the co-main event between Andy Lee and Peter Quillen. It was a split decision win for, actually a split decision draw for nobody. So both fighters get away with a little luck, I guess you could say, and not having the loss, but Mike thought Quillen did enough to win. It was sort of in Quillen's hometown, man, so I know he's from the New York area. So it was very surprising. You know, Lee got knocked down a couple times early. He looked pretty sloppy, looked pretty awkward, but then he just kind of found his rhythm later in the fight, and Quillen got knocked down in the 7th round for the first time in his career. So that was a big moment. And
I was thinking, but overall, Lee came back pretty hard, and that's a fight that I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch.
Didn't they say something about the judge that scored that round that sort of made it a draw?
Even the judges, because they said a round does not have to automatically be an M8 round.
Right.
It's up to the judges' discretion to be thought the round was close, or if he thought the knockdown wasn't a convincing knockdown.
I think that was another former guest of ours, if I remember correctly. I think that was Glenn Feldman, right?
I think it was. And he scored that round 10-9 instead of 10-8.
Right. So that could have been the difference. That's what they were pointing out.
Really.
Also, that reminds me, talking about the Leonard fight, that reminded me of during this card, was it Marv Albert on that? Who was the commentator?
Yeah.
With Sugar Ray. It wasn't Al Michaels. It was Marv Albert. Because they got to talking about Aaron Pryor Jr., you know, seeing as he's got a famous name and a famous father, obviously. And I think Marv asked at one point, you know, how come that fight between you and Aaron Sr. never happened? So I thought it was interesting that I think he ducked that fight. But he started to kind of explain himself like, oh, it just never materialized. But, you know, he kind of seemed like he was holding some details back. So that might have been one of those people he ducked and was waiting to get over, like Hagler. But he was very
Yeah, that would have been a very entertaining, intriguing matchup. Wow.
Yeah, he admitted that, but it just kind of seemed a little sketchy about the details of why it never happened.
I'll tell you, man, I'll tell you with that fight, with Leonard and his speed and the way he could flurry punches together and Pryor's whirlwind attack, I'll tell you who I feel bad for is the punchback status.
Yeah.
Some guys have the little key pads they hit, and they had to, you know, between rounds, they had to get, like, the water bottle and the guy you're rubbing their neck down and put the ice bag on their hand.
So we had Aaron Pryor Jr. didn't do too well on this card. He got stopped by Marcus Brown. We also had Richard Colon beat Daniel Calzada. Felix Diaz beat Gabriel Brasil. Errol Spence Jr. got another win over guy Samuel Vargas, TKO in the fourth round. Luis Collazo back in action. He got a quick TKO in the second round over Christopher DeGalato, who I think was outmatched anyway. Never really had a chance. We had Victor Postol and Postol on Jake Guercero, or whatever the hell his name was. Can't pronounce that one. It was a unanimous decision. Heather Hardy didn't even get a fight going, I guess. It stopped in the third round and called a no contest, probably because of a cut or something. I never read it. Never read about that one, why they stopped it. And there was Ryan Burnett beat Stephen McIntyre by a first-round knockout in the first fight. That was it for that card. See if you can find anything else for us. Going over here from last Saturday. There was at least one other big card with a lot of big names on it. Let's see. Here it is. Yep, down San Juan, Puerto Rico, we had some big fights. We had Roman Martinez beat Orlando Salido by unanimous decision. Jose Gonzalez beat Marvin Quintero by RTD in the fifth round. Williams Arroyo beat Victor Ruiz by TKO in the third round. And pretty much it for the big names there. Before we move on, I did want to mention, too, that I was really impressed by Quillen's head movement in that fight with Andy Lee. They had one slow-motion shot of how he was on one of the knockouts of how Quillen did that picture perfect duck under and then threw the right hand over the top. And it really reminded me of Rocky. Not the movie Rocky, but Marciano and the crouch, the way he used to fight. And he just, I never seen anybody throw a punch like that since watching Rocky footage. So that was great. That was great to see. And it's a big reminder of all the boxers out there that, you know, want to know the right way to do things. But you know, you can't just stand there and be a stationary target. And it really does help to not be where your punch is, you know, when somebody's got a chance to counter. You know, think Andy Lee tried to throw a punch back, and you know, he didn't even know where the guy's head was. So, good. Knocked back into the ropes and then knocked down after that, I think. But, yeah, that was one of the best replays I've seen in a while. It's a great technique to just duck down and act like you're going to the body and then just throw that overhand right like that. It's kind of a borderline right hook, I think. More of a straight right. So that's about it for the boxing schedule last week and this week. We've gone over all the UFC stuff. See if I got any new stuff in the email. There we go, Google Alerts. Also, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather had their media days recently. Nothing really big coming out of them. Probably the biggest story is that Floyd has said once again that he's sick of boxing. He doesn't enjoy it anymore. And he's really definitely done after this next fight. After one more fight after the Floyd Pacquiao fight. Leaving. Just in case, the UFC has reserved a December date for Square Garden. No word yet on how they're going to actually get anything passed in the legislature, but I know it's pending still. But they've gone ahead and booked Madison Square Garden for December. We'll see what happens. We won't say what date. But the UFC's website says that UFC 194 is scheduled for December 5th and the location to be announced. So we'll see. And, of course, Dana White wouldn't be Dana White if he didn't drop an F-bomb or an expletive. So his quote about it was, obviously, it would be a bad expletive card. Just to ask paper. We come to New York, we're going to blow it out of the water. So, can't help them put the huge. We know a bunch of UFC fighters are from New York. Chris Weidman, John Jones, Eddie Gordon, Ian Vellante, and Aljamain Sterling. They're all on this weekend's card. They're all from New York. Of course, the guy we talked about a lot last week, also from New York, Raging Al. So I'm sure he'd love to fight there. So he wouldn't have the same. Win or lose. And Harry Reid is back in the news for his boxing experience. He said he's not sure if the boxing blow to the head were good for him. No shit. Yeah, I never really looked at his professional record or anything, but apparently he did have a lot of fights. He was not just a boxing college type of guy like Ian Tony.
and he couldn't beat a treadmill. Boy, what a way for your career to end, huh?
A very, very difficult sport. As a young man, I'm not sure all those blows I took to the head did me much good. Football, he says, should be banned over boxing. He says, we've been through that before. I was banned football before I was banned boxing. I think that's much more dangerous than boxing. That was another thing that was making the headlines this week. Football should be banned. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty hard to do. I don't know what's going to be in this article, but I like the headline. Manny Pacquiao's new speed bag has Floyd Mayweather's face on it. Big surprise. Big surprise. Another big fight just signed, Amir Khan versus Chris Algieri. Former fighter, former opponent of Manny Pacquiao. Knocked him all over the ring. But yeah, Chris Algieri is his next opponent for Amir Khan. It's going to be Chris's next opponent. It's Friday, May 29th at the Barclays Center. And it's a pretty big deal. Speaking of deals, I don't know if it was just signed, but been making the rounds in the news lately that Miguel Cotto versus Daniel Gill, the real deal deal, is set for later this year, too. But Algeria is 20-1 with the one loss coming to Pacquiao. He's got 8 knockouts. Khan is 30-3 with 19 knockouts. And he's been trying to get that Floyd Mayweather fight. So obviously this would be putting him in good position to get that in September, which is when Floyd is said he's going to have the last one. So this is at the end of May, so that gives him June, July, and August to get ready for a September fight. So that's definitely possible. Doubtful, I think, but possible. And not only does Manny Speedbag have Floyd's face on it, but it's not just taped to it like you would tape a picture to a dartboard. It's actually freaking painted on. Oh, yeah, I'm going to have to retweet that. That went on Twitter. Definitely. It's a pretty good-looking Speedbag. Whoever the artist is, did a really good job. Very good. And it was a gift from attorney Robert Shapiro. That's funny. You might remember the name Bob Shapiro because he defended O.J. Simpson in 1995. That's funny. And, of course, Ronda Rousey visited Manny recently at his house.
Wow.
You got a kick out of that. They're actually both the same height. Exactly the same height.
Would have been taller.
Yeah, I thought so too, but she obviously wasn't wearing her heels. That's funny. And then Jeremy Lin also got a visit from Manny Pacquiao. He's a little bit taller than Floyd. That's funny. I mean, Manny got a visit from Manny. I guess that's about it. The big news stories we've got, all the events we've covered. You have anything else, breaking news stuff, nothing like that?
I do want to, because I forgot to mention this earlier, but you guys really want to read something enjoyable, and there's the preview issue for the Pacquiao Mayweather fight. Ring Magazine, I saw it actually sold in a couple different stores. I sold in one Walmart store. I mean, I get a subscription, so I mean, I get mine delivered. But in this Ring Magazine, aside from all the Pacquiao Mayweather talk, it was also chronicling the 30th anniversary of Pacquiao Hearn. So they would say, well, it's hard, two guys, like, they really hated each other. But there was a little bit bad blood between them, mainly because the fight was happened like 3 years prior. And for good reason, but it fell through. And Hagler was kind of pissed off about that. And there was some, a little bit of charm to the fight. But I think that's what prompted Hagler to pass the way he did it, which was so uncharacteristic for him. And they were talking about, like, the greatest incident ever. And talking about that fight, it was like, normally, you get like a feel out process in the first round. You know, fighter goes out there and tries to probe, he tries to figure out what his opponent has, what his opponent's going to do, and then set up a game plan from there. And that fight, there was no probing, there was no setting up, there was no game plan. It was just balls to the wall from the start. And how afterwards, when it was over, how the fighters had really deep mutual respect for that.
All right. Well, I also did want to mention Ronda Rousey. She didn't read the whole article, but I saw a couple of headlines that she's trying to find any way she can to make it back to the WWE. So I think I was talking about a few weeks ago about that when she first made her appearance at WrestleMania. It's going to be tough to keep her in the UFC now. She did just sign that new contract, but obviously that second opportunity is calling. And her movie just came out, and it's kicking ass at the box office, so her star power is still rising. And good for her. She's trying to find a way. Who knows when it'll happen. But she also admitted that it didn't all go as planned at WrestleMania. She didn't even really plan to throw Triple H across the ring like that. She said she pulled that out of her ass, basically.
This happened, I guess.
Anyway, that's all we got for today. This episode, and next week, I'll try to get a guest as soon as possible. We'll promote it and get it out there so everybody knows who's coming on. And we'll see everybody then.
All right, guys.
Look at the four deals we got on TV this weekend. I think we got a couple of good ones. Really looking forward to seeing the TK Preventic fight. And I'm not going to have a chance to write an article on that one, but I'm going to give you my prediction on that one. And I'm going to go a little bit out on the limb here. And I'm going with Provednikov late. Because we've seen that they're both great punchers. But we saw Matisse get beat up by Danny Garcia. And then after that, he had to play with Carlos Molina. And he got off the deck a couple times. But he was hurt a couple times. And his power won the day. So Provednikov, while not a great boxer, has a better chin. And I think his chin wins the fight in a shootout.
Yeah.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing if you're right.
All right.
All right, guys.
See you guys later. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, get well soon, Tony.
All right. Let's enjoy the fights this weekend. Until next week.
I'll see you, baby.
Adios, folks.